You're listening to Sister Radio. Okay, guys, Angela Luna is talking with us. And if that name doesn't mean anything to you, it's about to. Angela is the CEO and founder of Adif. You've probably seen the videos of her designs of jackets that convert into tents, sleeping bags, and reflective clothing. Her product line is going to help the Syrian refugee crisis. She's done TED Talks and is single-handedly changing the fashion industry. Here we go. You're listening to Sister Radio. So take two on my interview with Angela. Angela, thank you for being so cool.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Everybody listening, I totally deleted the first interview and had an FML moment like no other. And so we're doing
the best of us.
Seriously, and you know as an entrepreneur, but I think you're probably more type A than I am, so you probably wouldn't let that happen.
I don't know. I've had like disasters happen where I've been working on a project for hours and hours and hours, and then my computer just crashes, and I'm like, oh my God, I just need to walk away.
Okay, that makes me feel better.
It's good that you're still on the ball. You know, you followed up again. We're doing this round two, so that's good. I probably would have just like face-palmed and then quit life for the rest of the day. So that's all right.
Well, that was one of the things we talked about in the take one of the interview. Was like persevering, determination.
Yep. Exactly.
So that's what we're doing. So Angela, you're an entrepreneur, a designer, an activist, a speaker. But what three words would you use to describe yourself?
So I would definitely say passion, number one, just in terms of what I'm doing as a designer and, you know, being an entrepreneur as well. That's something that is really important for me, as well as determination. So basically never giving up. That kind of goes hand in hand with passion. And then lastly, I would consider myself a change maker, which I've been referred to a few times. So I think it's a really cool phrase, especially now with our changing world.
Yeah, I've heard that phrase world changer used a lot more recently, and that definitely applies to you.
Thanks. No, I love it.
And I'm adding humble because you are one of the most humble people I know.
Thank you. I try. No, I think it's really important to be humble about everything you're doing. There's so many people in the fashion industry that just like ride on the accolades, and I have witnesses too at my school. But I think it's important just to, you know, realize what you're doing, and that, you know, success can come and it can go. So just pretty mindful of that.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, that it can come and go, and that keeps you kind of in a grounded place, because then you're not rooted to your, you know, fame or notoriety. But it's interesting because we kind of are like, actually, I wanted to talk to you about this because we didn't say this in the last interview, but being a millennial, there is that kind of like shameless self-promotion that we do on social media as a generation.
Yeah.
But as a millennial, you've kind of done something else. You're like not like the rest of us.
I know. That's why I'm like, I can't handle when people like complain about millennials. I'm like, there is no... Like, I don't know, I'm not an example of this at all, and I know several other people that are definitely, like, anti-millennial, but we are millennials, but we're not, like, anything that anyone has been saying about our generation. So, I'm like, people that hate on millennials, I don't know, I think they're not willing to get with the times.
Well, and that's just, like, probably a rite of passage of getting older, is you get to hate on the next generation.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll probably do it, too, but I think you're right.
You young kids.
You whippersnappers. Yeah.
Exactly.
But I think, like, millennials were, because really invention, which is everything that you're doing is you're inventing something, is born out of necessity. And so we've got all of these things that we see that need to happen. So some great invention and ingenuity is coming from us. And we're more open-minded. We're more progressive as a generation.
I agree, yeah.
Well, so I wanted to ask you, you know, going back to your humility, something that's kind of cool about you is you're Forbes top 30 under 30. You're only 23 years old. just crazy.
Yep.
What is that?
Yes, I'm very young.
Well, and then you've done TED Talks, and, like, people who are sitting in on TED Talks are, like, it's a broad spectrum of age, but I've seen the crowds. I mean, they look like people who are maybe twice your age, maybe they've got different degrees, mm-hmm. and so what is it like to be put in a position of influence and to be kind of up there with the best of them and put up there with the best of them? What is that like for you?
Wow. Well, yeah, I'm not sure I'm up there with the best of them. I know, yeah, this is my humility coming back, or also my intense self-criticism. But, yeah, I mean, it's very interesting because when I first went to Parsons, everyone was kind of, like, discussing the framework of how to become your own designer and how to be a successful, entrepreneur. And so the framework they kind of put out for us was you go to Parsons, you go work for a company for about 20 or 30 years, and then once you have enough experience, you go ahead and you launch your own company. And, you know, I kind of had that in my head as, like, maybe this is the path to success. But then, you know, with this project, it's not like I have forever to do this. There is a time limit for, you know, there's people dying every day who are refugees or displaced persons. And so, you know, they're really, like, I have to act on this now because this is something that's really important within our current culture and the whole world in general. So it wasn't like I could wait 30 years and then do this project. So, you know, I started my own company being right out of college, literally at graduation, like emailing and doing all of that. And then I actually went back to Parsons to speak on an alumni event. And afterwards, I had people who were 30 years in the industry, who were like in their 50s or 60s, coming up to me and asking for me to give them advice on how to start their own company. So, like, I thought it was always really interesting how, you know, everyone always says, oh, when you're older, you understand. But then, like, you know, being 23 and starting something, you know, the people who are in their 50s or 60s and kind of starting out just the same still have no idea what to do. And, like, basically what I've learned is that no one knows what they're doing. Everyone just acts like they know what they're doing, which is very true. And, I mean, like, I think that's an important thing that I've learned as well is just, like, as long as you carry the confidence and you know what you want and you are willing to work at it, you're going to get it. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting being the young person in the room, usually, like, being the ages of people's children when I'm trying to negotiate with them. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely think there is not one path to success and not one path to starting a business.
Well, and I'm thinking, like, there must be some ageism that you face, like, as far as being in a boardroom or making executive decisions or getting investors.
Yeah. I mean, I have seen that too. And I have also seen it kind of like almost on the sexism side of, you know, me being a woman first off and then two being 23 and just graduating, you know, from college. So yeah, I've got like three things technically working against me, but you know, it's important to just like acknowledge where we're all going, acknowledge our generation and acknowledge the power that we have and what we bring to the table. And so, you know, it's easy. I've been able to combat that and be able to stand up for myself in those situations.
Yeah. And just because you're going up against some of those things doesn't mean you just don't do it because of those reasons. You got to fight through.
Yeah, no.
You got to make the path.
If anyone says like you can't do this, then the right answer is just to say, watch me.
Yeah, I love that. That's so good. Yeah. Well, so have you always been an activist? Like, I picture you like this little kid setting up bake sales to raise funds for a good cause. Like, have you always been an activist?
So that's a really good question. Actually, I did do a lemonade sale for Hurricane Katrina when I was like, I don't know. Well, I don't know how old I was when that happened, but I was, you know, I heard things through my family, and like I was always kind of I tried to care, but like you know when you're a teenager and things kind of you know the world revolves around you, I guess at that age, you know, you take a shift. But you know when I was in like fifth grade, I remember I wore a suit to class because I was trying to break the gender norms, I guess, at like when I was like 9 or 10. So
yes.
Yeah, I mean like it was always. I wanted to be, like, a change maker, I guess, from a really young age, but, you know, I fell out of current events for a long time. I got my news through Facebook. I was deep in the fashion industry and had just purchased my first Chanel bag, which was ridiculous. But, you know, I was woke again, let's say, when the refugee crisis happened, and couldn't go back from that. So I knew I had to do more and actually, you know, do the research about what was going on the other side of the world.
What do you think? I mean, you really have kind of become a voice for the Syrian refugee crisis. What do you think it is about this specific issue that the world is facing that drew you to the cause?
I honestly don't know. I think, I knew what was going on, and I was kind of researching the Syrian civil war in the Arab Spring when that was kind of occurring. But like then, when the refugee crisis happened, as you know, as an effect of that, it was honestly just like the unfairness of it all. Like I remember seeing the picture of Alon Kurdi and like literally just having my heart completely break and being like, this kid did nothing. None of these people have done anything. Why is it that they're being put through this situation? It just seemed really unfair to me and like a major injustice in our world. And the fact that they were being treated like criminals didn't really make sense at all. So I don't know. I think that was probably just, you know, one of the first issues that caused me to wake up. And now, too, it's like there's a thousand other things that I'm incredibly passionate about. But, you know, this is kind of where I'm at right now, and this is what I'm going to focus on. But, yeah, I think it was just, you know, it started with that picture and then just went from there. I don't know. I can't stand to witness injustice.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things you talk about in your videos is how it would be that soundbite or that news clip and then just go into something that's just non-essential. Exactly. Or not important. And it is a very strange way that we culturally watch the news and how we, mm-hmm. How that affects us even, that we would go like from consumer ad this and then tragedy and heartbreak. Mm-hmm. But if it sounds like something that has been like a major part of your passion is that sense of injustice. Do you feel, or actually I wanted to ask you, what about being at the refugee camps? Can you just share like a little bit about what that was like and some of the things you saw? Like, I know you do a great job of sharing that on your TED Talk, or I'm trying to think of the other one that you did that you talk about it so well, but I'm totally blanking, darn it. But,
It's okay, no worries.
Yeah, what was that like for you being in that refugee camps?
Yeah, so, you know, I had conducted the majority of my research from the U.S. because I didn't have the right contacts in order to visit the camp. So it took me around a year from developing the project and then reaching out to finally get the right connection so that I could visit the camps and do testing as well as, you know, do some volunteer donations with the company I was going with. But yeah, it was very emotional. It was a completely heartbreaking experience, but like in a way, it was like I kind of knew going in what I was getting into, having done all the research. But it's a completely different thing to be physically in a camp with these people than to be kind of hiding behind a screen where, you know, you're not there, you're not physically interacting with them, you're not, you know, sharing breakfast with them or doing, and it's just like basically daily life. And it was incredibly emotional. Some of the stories or like things that we had seen and heard were very heartbreaking, and I still remember them to this day. But yeah, something that I found very interesting, which I guess should have come like automatically or been a no-brainer, was just how different every single refugee camp was. I guess when I was going over, I expected them to all be run by the government or run by UNHCR or the IRC. But in Greece, I know this is different in different countries, basically, like, everything is so unorganized and nothing is really together at all. Like, the UNHCR and IRC came in to set up the camps, but no one from their organizations are running them, or the government runs a few camps, but then there's like 100 others that are just run by the refugees that are actually living there. And so it was kind of like snowflakes. Like no refugee camp was the same or even similar at all to the one next door to the other. So yeah, it was, they all varied in conditions, but like overall, everything was, you know, subpar living conditions. Like there were some that were nicer, but like completely in general and speaking in totality, like no one would ever want to live in these places for at all, or I mean, even for like a week, or let alone months or years.
Well, when you think about people in that kind of environment, it's easy to think of it as being a place where it like breeds desperation and that can cause violence.
Completely.
And is that like the atmosphere there? Like, can you sense that there's that those things going on, that it is dangerous and that people are kind of in a desperate state, or what can you speak
to? I mean, you can definitely tell that people are depressed. Something that I thought was really interesting to think about, and I think I heard this at a panel where people were discussing, you know, refugee resettlement. In the refugee camps, like, people are kind of either looking to the past or looking to the future. Like, either they're kind of dwelling on what has happened to them in their previous country, which, of course, makes sense. I would still be haunted by those memories. Or, you know, they're looking to the future. They're trying to plan their life, you know, most likely in Germany, which is where most of them are going, or all these other countries. But, like, you know, it's really hard to be in the present. And I think no one wants to be in the present. No one wants to think that this is somewhere that they're going to be stuck for they don't even know how long. But, yeah, I mean, it's you're in, like, a weird limbo. Like, you're not quite out of your previous situation, and you're not quite onto this new life, but you're stuck in this environment, and you're not even mentally there. So it was really disheartening. But something that I did notice, too, at one of the camps on Lesbos, instead of just, like, normal trees, there were all of these olive trees. Tons of olive trees. And what I thought was so interesting was that, like, the resilience of everyone that was living there. So, like, these moms and these, all these women were just, like, collecting olives every day and making these oils and preserves from them in order to make their food taste a little bit better. And I'm like, wow, that kind of resourcefulness and, like, adaptability in order to, like, interact with your environment in a way to improve your life, in a way that, like, wouldn't really be predicted, wasn't really thought about probably by the people who set up the camp. But, yeah, I mean, I think, like, while it is easy to get incredibly depressed, you know, I did witness a lot of people that have a tremendous amount of hope and a lot of resourcefulness to make the situation just a little bit better.
That's encouraging to hear. I mean, I, like we were saying before, like, necessity really is the mother of invention. And so It's cool to see that people are able to at least, I don't know, I have a sense of moving forward, some of them. And I think that's something you do with your product line and with Adif is you've created a sense of hope in just who you are and what you're doing. So I want to talk a little bit about your product, because everyone can go see what it looks like. You've got to go see what it looks like, the TED Talks. So the other video that I was thinking of was the Positive Economy Forum, because that was really good. Mm-hmm. So watch that one too. And you can see so basically the jacket that you had set up was the tent. And so you took it down from it being in its tent form, like, under a minute, or about a minute you took it down?
It's, like, it's pretty easy to get up and down. The only kind of issues that people would have is just, like, dealing with the poles, because, you know, they can detach. Like, they're just, like, you know how difficult tent poles can be. But we're redesigning it, too, so that way there won't be any poles. But, yeah, so it's pretty quick to, like, I have set it up in, like, less than 5 minutes, and I can take it down in about 2 minutes. But, yeah, it's really easy to set up and down. I've had people at the refugee camp, too, practice setting it up on their own, and they had a blast with it.
Well, and something that's pretty cool is you're doing something new in the fashion industry. So you're being conscious, and you're wanting to create a humanitarian brand. And so I wanted to ask you, what has it been like within the fashion industry? I know you had mentioned that you've had some experience instead where it was like the humanitarian side that you got more criticism for than the fashion side. But how has the fashion industry supported you and helped you, and how has it not?
Yeah, I mean, while I do criticize the fashion industry a lot, I was kind of surprised to see just how willing all of these kind of industry leaders are to, you know, embrace this new future for the industry itself. So I feel like most designers out there, they want to see something like this. Whether or not they act on it or whether or not they do it themselves is another story. But, you know, they want to see a positive change in the industry, and they want to see fashion be able to help people. Because I think this is something that all of us have underlying is, like, I feel like as a fashion designer, when you kind of introduce yourself as a fashion designer, it kind of comes with this idea that, you know, while what you're doing is super cool, it doesn't really measure up on a global scale. So I think, like, as a community, the fashion industry is interested in seeing, you know, what could be done to remedy this, or how fashion could have a larger impact. But yeah, I mean, it's been amazing. I've met with some high profile designers, and, you know, they've, like, been incredibly supportive and only had praise to say about the collection. So it's been amazing, because when I first designed everything, I had no idea how people would react. I had no idea whether or not it would go over well in fashion, just because something like this has never before been done. So yeah, it was a very pleasant surprise to see how on board everyone and how supportive everyone has been.
Yeah, and there's room to grow, of course, in the fashion industry, but I think that's, like, why you're there. You're there to help shift the perspective.
Exactly.
And make it grow. Yeah, and but I think it's interesting if you want to speak to a little bit about the resistance from the humanitarian side. What were some of the things that were being brought up as far as your effectiveness or whatever it was that they were complaining about or criticizing?
Yeah. So I feel like with the humanitarian side, it's kind of like people who have spent their entire lives, you know, focusing on the best systems to set up in, like, these different communities and different areas. And, like, here comes this girl with her fashion degree trying to make a difference in this kind of environment. So I think it was definitely something new. When it was just a project, it was a little bit more critical, just because we didn't have anything in progress. We didn't have production. We weren't planning on doing any donations as of yet. But now that we have, you know, we're going to be donating 460 jackets to refugee camps this September. So now that we kind of have somewhat of an impact actually happening, it's lessened us a little bit. But I think, like, with humanitarian organizations, what they're looking for is to make sure that people are being affected in a positive way, and we're not creating, like, a system of dependence and things like that. So I'm taking note of all of their criticisms too, and trying to include that in our business plan. So now we are also looking to run a few pilots, hopefully this year, to see if we can hire resettled refugee populations in the U.S. or homeless populations in the U.S. to kind of provide job opportunities for them, and either make some of the products that we're going to be selling or donating, or maybe just making some details that would be included in some of the products. So that way, you know, the narrative is still in there, and we're also helping people in addition to just donating products. So, yeah, but it was awesome being at the Positive Economy Forum in France, because that was a major humanitarian kind of conference, and to be there and to be taken seriously as this new social entrepreneurship company was totally amazing.
That's so cool. That was actually one of my favorite things that I saw that you did, just because, you know, I feel like, I don't know, you're 23, you've got all of these amazing things that you're doing within your business, and you're really like a one-man band, and you're kind of pulling it all together.
Exactly.
And it was just like an inspiring moment.
I'm the janitor, I'm the I'm the creative director, I'm the CFO, I'm the CEO, I'm like the assistant that goes and grabs the coffee. It's truly a one-man show.
Yeah, for now at least, because this thing is going to just blossom, I know it.
Here's hoping.
Well, so tell me a little bit about being a woman in business. What have been some of your greatest successes, and just some of your biggest struggles as far as being a woman in business, and any insight you might want to give to a young woman who has an idea that she wants to have a business? So, speak to that.
I would say, I mean, like, current struggle right now is just finding funding. And actually, I was told a statistic recently that women entrepreneurs typically have more of a difficult time finding funding than men. I think that's also why there are a few VC firms that are now, or grant programs that are now being established to kind of support women entrepreneurs. So that has been my biggest struggle so far. But you know, being a woman in business, it's important to realize you know, like to harness your power. And I think in some ways to kind of not give in to the men of the room. So, this is something that I'm always aware of and I find myself doing and I'm trying to fix right now is I'm always like the person who feels like they need to talk when there's a silence because I want to make everyone else feel comfortable. Like I'm someone who's typically not very comfortable with silence. And so I've noticed that men seem to use their silences more strategically and more intentionally. And so, I feel like it puts you in a position of not being in power when you're the one who's constantly talking, you're trying to fill the void. So now I'm trying to be more conscious of that. And, you know, especially with negotiating and things like that, when someone else is being silent, I'm like, okay, you know what? I don't have to talk right now. I don't have anything to say. I'm just going to be quiet until you either fix your offer or do something else and try to leverage that accordingly. But, I mean, being a woman in business, it's difficult and it's definitely a man's world right now. But honestly, I think that the world is going to be a much better place when there's more women in power.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
Yes. Like, Seriously, we need to get on that.
Well, I really like that you're talking about using like silence almost as a weapon, so to speak, in the business.
Silence
in the
is
business.
A great weapon.
I never even thought about that, but that's so true. Have you ever seen The Wolf of Wall Street?
Yes,
that's like one of the things that he says, right? He's like, the first person to talk loses, basically. Exactly, I'm sure there was an F-bomb thrown in there, but yeah, wow.
Yeah, no, it's important, and it's, you know, I think it's silence is power in a way, so, and I'm always like this bubbly person who's always talking, so yeah, I'm learning that, and I think it's important for women to learn that too.
It's really good. I really like that. Well, so what do you want to be known for? Like, you're a businesswoman, and, you know, you're somebody who's blazing a trail. What are some of the things that you've thought, that's what I want to be known for, that's what I want my legacy to be?
So I really want to make a positive impact in the world in any broad sense. But, you know, specifically now choosing my path in fashion and having this humanitarian component as well, you know, I would love to be known as a person who changed the way that we thought about clothes or changed the system or, you know, brought about a new kind of revolution of designers and a new revolution of the industry that hopefully we'll see in the future. But, yeah, I mean, like, ultimately, I just want to have a positive effect, one, on the fashion industry and, two, on global displacement as a whole.
Yeah, that goes back to, like, those three words when you were saying, like, a world
exactly.
changer. Yeah, you'll be known for that for sure. You're already known for that.
Thanks, I know. That's what I'm trying to create positive change.
Yes, and so something that I was wondering was, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever been given or a piece of advice that you kind of live by? It doesn't have to be for, like, women in business, but just something you live by.
Yeah. So, actually, I was thinking about this in the time between our first interview and this one now, but I honestly, like, something, and I don't always follow this, but something I think is really important, especially being, you know, a woman in business, as well as just being, like, a human being, is to go with your gut. Like, I've had a few relationships with people that, you know, I thought would move forward in terms of, like, business collaboration. But, like, you know, when I first met them, I was like, I don't know, something seems a little bit off. But I was like, my brain rationalized it. And I was like, well, I'm going to go ahead and see what happens anyway. And in the end, you know, they ended up being, like, probably some of the worst people I've ever worked with. So, yeah, I would say trust your instincts and go with your gut because first impressions, well, you know, you shouldn't always like judge a book by its cover, but first impressions usually are correct. And, yeah, just to stick to that, even if it seems like you're passing up an opportunity, it's better to say no to things, than to be kind of ruined in the end.
Mm. Yeah, trust in that gut, man. Cause it's hard. Like as
exactly.
a woman, you like totally second guess yourself all the time.
Oh, completely.
So I'm like,
yeah, yes. And I'm like, oh, maybe I said something weird and that's why they kind of reacted weird. Or maybe this, I don't know, like, you know, you try to rationalize it, but it's like, you know what? No, if you feel a certain way about someone and you know, you really want to work with them, but they kind of make you uncomfortable, then no, just cut it loose. It's not worth going down the path.
Yeah, trust your gut. What do you think about risk taking? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on taking risks?
Like, so my entire company is basically built on a risk, but, like, I'm someone, I hate risks, like, but, like, that's the only way that things get done. So, you know, something that I think is really interesting is that, like, every day you should be challenged and you should be in kind of outside of your comfort zone, because that's the only way that you'll do anything spectacular. Like, no one ever writes a story or writes a book about that time they did everything that they usually do. So, yeah, I mean, like, I'm like a type A personality, so, like, I don't really like taking risks, but I'll do them anyway. But, I mean, I feel like it's completely necessary. If you want to do something special or be unique or to make an impact at all, you're going to have to take a risk, and it's going to be incredibly terrifying. Like, I'm probably scared, like, every day of my life, but... that's when the magic happens. That's really when the magic happens. So I think it's worth it. Just know that going in that it's going to be scary, but you'll get through it.
Yes. Good. I always say it's like, constantly having to jump out of an airplane and hoping your shoe opens, exactly. But it always opens. Oh, it always opens.
It will always open. Yeah. It's like you worry about so much stuff too. And I mean, like, I'm a very anxious person. I worry about things that aren't even problems, but lately I've just kind of been like, well, you know what, every other time that I've been worried about something, it's worked out in the end, so I'm not even going to worry about this. Like, with the Kickstarter, actually, we only had, like, 2 weeks left before it was ending, and we were at, like, 16,000, and our goal was 60,000, and everyone was coming up to me, like, what's your plan B? Are you freaking out? And I'm like, nope, it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen. I'm just not going to worry about it. And then it happened in the end, so... yeah, everything's going to work out. That's what I live by. Everything's going to be okay.
Everything's going to be okay. And you do have a good support system, which kind of leads me into my next question. I know you've got good support with your parents. I know you were saying that your mom is a major supporter for you and has been there for you. But what about sisterhood? What does being a sister mean to you?
So, to me, it means basically treating everyone like family, just kind of on a broad sense, but also, you know, just being there through the good and the bad. You know, my friends that live in New York with me, they're completely my sisters. Like, they're the ones who are in all of the photo shoots of my collection. Basically, like, they're the famous ones, too, because they're the faces of everything. And, you know, I can call them anytime, and they're willing to help. And anytime they call me, I'm willing to help. So it's just kind of like always being there. And, you know, and a lot of times putting them first and, you know, doing whatever is needed from you, because that's what family does.
That's so cool. I didn't know that your friends were the ones who were in the collection in those pictures.
Literally every single person in any of the pictures are like my close friends there. Or like roommates or sisters from New York, basically. So,
I love that.
Everyone is like basically one of my closest friends.
Oh, that is so cool. See, that's like so important, I think, too, in business, is including people who you support and people who support
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. I mean, everyone always says like not to get into business with your friends, but I feel like, you know, like as a friend, you should support your other friends. Like one of my close friends is a photographer, and I always have her shoot all my stuff, and I try to loop her into things, and she tries to loop me into things. So it's like, you know, I think it's important to work with your friends, and I think it's important to support each other.
It's
and
so
that's
cool.
Like, that's the best way you guys can get something done.
Yes, yes, women supporting other women, get stuff done.
Yes.
Okay, yes. I have a really fun question I wanted to ask, because I'm curious what your answer would be, but if you were a superhero, what would your superpower be?
Oh my god, wow, I don't know if teleportation counts as a superpower, but
heck yeah, it does.
I would be like all over that, because I spend so much of my life traveling, and I think it would be just so much easier. And if I could just like get from like A to B super fast, that's what I would do. So yeah, teleportation, definitely.
Yeah, okay, that's pretty cool. I like that. All right, I wanted to do a little bit of word association with you, just for
okay,
yeah, because I'm curious what will come from this too. Okay.
All right.
So when I say the word, just the first thing that comes to your mind, a thought or another word, whatever it is, love.
All right. Everyone.
Fashion.
System.
Change.
The world.
Create.
I was going to say change, but...
No, that's cool.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say create change, yeah.
Women.
Empowerment.
Refugee.
Welcome.
Yeah. That was awesome. It's so good. Well, so everybody listening, obviously throughout this show, I've been saying, go watch the TED Talk. Go and watch the Positive Economy Forum, and they can follow Agdiff. I'm like mumbling my words. Holy crap.
Okay.
It's all right, everyone. I swear. Yeah. It's fine.
Agdiff.com. It's ADIFF.com. That's where we have the TED Talk as well as the Positive Economy Forum linked, and our social media is on there too. But otherwise, Facebook, it's Agdiff Startup, and then Instagram and Twitter, it's Agdiff Brand. So yeah, follow us there, and we'll be posting all of our updates once we have the 10 jackets available for purchase, too. You guys can get in on that. So,
yeah,
follow us on all of our social medias.
Yeah, those jackets are amazing. I mean, just, like, I know, obviously, they're, like, for the Syrian refugee crisis, the refugee crisis, and for homeless people, mm-hmm. but they're so well-designed. I just see them, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I can see that on the runway, for sure.
Exactly. I mean, and it has been on the runway too, but I think it's important, like, with these jackets, they have everything incredibly functional, but, you know, of course, I have my background in evening wear, and I have my background with Parsons, so it's impossible for me to make something that isn't beautiful, I guess. Like, I have, some attention to aesthetics and things like that, so... Yeah, but thanks. I appreciate that.
Well, even though everyone missed out on, you know, little conversations about Colin Farrell, et cetera, I think that everyone's going to walk away knowing more about you, feeling inspired. And if somebody is listening to this and they want to invest, go to the website, adiff.com. And so thank you again.
Yeah, hit me up.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is so fun. We love you on Sister Radio. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to Sister Radio. Thanks again, Angela, for coming on the show. And we hope you all feel inspired, ready to blow up some boxes and take on the world. We love y'all. Sister Radio.